This show is not a financial advice. Bitcoin and shitcoins involve risk. Consult with a professional before investing. Now it's time for our sponsors. So actually, a month ago, I got sponsorship by Citadel 21, the Bitcoin cultural design. It's a really amazing website that is run by Harlanot and Katya. They're running this beautiful magazine every month. Every month on the 21st, a new magazine comes out, and Citadel 21 is basically a Bitcoin cultural design. Within it, you will find the voices of the plebs, people who don't really be heard within the community, people who have opinion, people who know things, people who are the silent experts. Those who matter the most, or not. Depends on your views. So yeah, check out Citadel 21. It's citadel21.com. The next sponsor is BitPiggies. Oh well, my favorite sponsor. Oh man. Everybody check it out. Check out bitpiggies.com. It's with a Y S. It's so, these pigs are really pretty. You should buy yourself and your kids. They teach you self-sovereignty because it comes with great responsibility. But actually, not just for yourself, but for your kids also. So go on and buy it right now. Are you looking for podcast music? Or just music in general, or whatever music. Maybe you want to jazz onto something. Look no further. Go on Twitter at Holovirus. Holovirus and his friend create really epic music. Really, really epic music, not just for podcasts. If you're looking for something to jazz out onto, or something new to commission, you should show him a DM or an ad at him. For more information about his rates and the commission prices, DM him for more information. Now you're live.
Well, we are not live?
Live, we're just recording.
Hi.
Hi, what's up?
So, brief introduction, the notorious BT chap again. Thanks for having me on your podcast. Carlo, as always, is a joy talking with you, yeah.
Nice having you here, man.
Yeah, nice. And here, BTC Viking or Hodling Eric or Viking Hodl on Twitter. Just back from Twitter jail.
Really? What happened with your account?
I don't really know. Like, someone must have, like...
Someone snitched on it?
Someone had me on his black block list and, you know, stuff happens on Twitter.
Man, it's really annoying when it gets there. When people goes and reports your account, and then you're like, oh yeah, I shouldn't have done that. But then they still do it, and they're being an ass.
Yeah, that and actually somehow Twitter wanted me to verify my phone number. And
maybe you tweeted about the Wuhan.
It could be.
Don't say the name, just anything. don't say the exact name of it. Just refer to it as Wuhan, because it doesn't get banned on Apple Podcasts. Something like that.
At banned we are.
Yeah. And we are now banned, officially. This is the banned podcast.
It's too much financial poetry, you know?
Yeah. So we want to talk about books today, right? Any ideas on that?
Yeah. I think I took my time to like open all the books I ever read about Bitcoin, and of course also before, and it's like super funny to like go through the history of how I actually became a what people are nowadays calling a toxic maximalist, because it didn't obviously start with Bitcoin. Yeah, I went through a lot of evolutionary stages, if you want, and in the beginning were actually some novels, like entertainment novels, that get you into the mindset, or that make you start to think about money and how it can impact your life and stuff. And I think this is the very basic foundation of my Bitcoin career, although they did not cover Bitcoin at all. So I think, yeah, I would like to discuss a bit about this, like, how you say, the first steps towards financial education, if you want.
Oh, yeah. Let's just step a bit back from that topic, because I have another interesting idea here. So, I know both of you guys love audiobooks, so that's no longer a secret. So how do you guys view audiobooks, Audible and all these things?
I don't know if I can say, like, love audiobooks, but, man, just so people know what you're referring to, I was earlier just asking you how you judge that. Like, because you were saying, I read this many books this year, I just wanted you to know, I wanted to ask you, like, how you, like, if you also count books you actually just heard, like, that were read to you, basically.
That's interesting.
But yeah, I gotta say, audiobooks just come by easy, and I feel like it's not the same rate of retention, but I think second best to reading it.
Mm-hmm. So if you would get a physical book, it would be much more easier after that to run through the entire thing again? Do you think so?
You mean when you have to read it?
If you listen first to the Audible, and then you listen next to the, you read next to the book, the physical one.
Yeah, I think, like, it comes by easier, definitely.
Uh-huh. Oh, I see. How about you, Champ?
I think so, too. I mean, most of the time, it's like I have to decide whether I will buy the book as a physical copy or whether I buy it for my Amazon Kindle. I'm sorry for, making an advertisement for this large United States company, but they are having the best user experience. I think I have to swap once for another option, or whether I will actually go for the Audible version. And I think the Audible version, I most of the time just go for the Audible version, because I know that I will finish those. I have many physical books lying around, but I don't in general find the time to actually read them. Yeah. However, when I'm going to run or going to do sports or going for a hike or whatnot, you can always have it in the background. You can absorb some information. Whether you will absorb it in the same way than if you're lying in the bed reading a book before you are going to sleep, that's a different thing, right? I mean, you will absorb much better the information if you're really focused and on a physical paperback. But for me, this is the best way to consume information without being able to do something at the same time. Like, yeah, you would call it some efficiency thing, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been as mentioned to Eric before and to you too also, that, you know, I kind of consider that there is some different psychological aspect behind reading digital format or physical format. And this was really, really something that came back at me when I read, I think it was either Antifragile or I think The Black Swan from Nassim Nicholas Taleb. Mentioned that probably there's a difference between having a digital Kindle in your hand and having a physical book, when you can feel the extra additional aspects of a book, like the touch, the feel of the book, like, and the smell, and then how the pages and the words are written on it, and they are like, they bring back a completely different aspect of reading, a different experience than just listening to a random voice or something that might not suit the book. Or it might be good depending on what kind of voice it is. And then there comes other problem if you have some problems like I do with ADHD, that, like, if you're listening to an Audible, then you kind of end up in the problem that you're not listening at some point, that you're distracted, and then what are you going to do? It's kind of harder to rewind, and then I think you get what I mean. But then, this is interesting, but I do like Amazon, the really, really amazing service they have. and I don't really care about plugging them, but it just, whenever I order physical books from them and any of them got damaged, they always refunded me. So I didn't even have to send them back. They just gave me the money and I had to order something new. So that was the whole thing. They're really, really fair and they have a really great service selling books. So yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. One thing that are, yeah, that is not so perfect about books, obviously they will take up a lot of space. And in my Audible bibliothek, I have at the moment like 130 titles. So I would have to stuff my place with books at a certain point. So my flatmate said, you know, keep it like keep it to a limit, please, dude. Don't overdo it before our friendship is over. And I was like, okay. So therefore, I went for the Kindle because you can have a complete like library on that little device. Obviously, you have to make sure that they are charged. But yeah, those things are really nice.
I really have to say, like, it's the hardest form for me to consume information, like to read them, like an ebook, like a PDF on a laptop is the worst. But but Kindle or for example, I was reading Grokking Bitcoin on the iPad. And I know there are like a lot of features one can use within like iBooks or other apps, but I really find it super hard to consume information this way.
Like, how does somebody actually consume a book, read a book on an iPad or a Kindle? It's just, this thing is so alien to me. It's like, I don't even know what to say. It's just so weird. Like, digital. Okay, maybe for Zoomers it's okay because maybe we should ask Nick or somebody else how they view these things, but it doesn't work for me, at least with digital. It just, it just there. It doesn't, it's just like, it's just a soulless thing that I'm reading, and like, it doesn't have anything, any aspect of reality for me. And it's really weird. Although I did read many online books for my university courses in the past, and I did perform pretty good with them also, but other than that, I'm not entirely sure. So,
well, I mean, I must say I'm quite a fanboy for the Kindle because it has this background lighting, so you can basically read whenever, wherever you want, and you can also mark some sentences that you find worth remembering. And you also see when other people mark some sentences, and that sometimes results in funny situations when you're reading a book. I find myself laughing to myself because some people were like marking hilarious sentences, and then this results obviously in you marking the sentence also and contemplating about more about what the meaning is. Like, it is like, yeah, it's an entertaining tweak of reading books, because you have, even although you're sitting alone at home or somewhere, you have this community feeling that somebody else was also stumbling upon this very sentence, found it funny and marked it. So yeah, but yeah, I don't want to make more advertisement for Amazon.
Yeah, for me, it works. Actually, yeah. I might actually buy a Kindle, and I don't know. I want to try it out, though.
Yeah, mission accomplished. Jeff Bezos, give me my money.
Give us a first class issue. Okay, so let me steer the topic a bit. What is the last five books that you guys read?
Last five books.
Okay, let's bring it down more easier. Last three.
I just finished actually Argentarius, or in German Argentarius. You know, the book about the letters from the bankier to his son.
The Money Changer. So, yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
It's a really interesting book, but I probably not gonna have to read it for a while.
Yeah, it's a really good book. Like, I mean, I sent you the first letter. I don't know.
Yeah, I did see it. It's really nice. I just kind of like feel like buying it for just the heck of it.
It was so crazy when I saw it was just, €6 on Amazon.
Yeah.
I just had to buy it, you know?
Yeah. It's cool. I mean, I probably we should also like post or write down all the books that we are discussing, because then people can look them up, because I never heard of this book that we were discussing. So would have to look at it. Yeah. Sounds interesting. Yeah.
This podcast is not sponsored by Amazon.
Disclaimer.
Yeah. The last book that I read, or basically that I listened to, that was not science fiction, because I'm listening a lot of science fiction, but I think that's not what we're going to cover here, was Currency Wars by James Rickards. And that was really interesting because they were like discussing how could an attack on the dollar system look like, if you would have some nations that would want to bring down the US dollar, how would they play it, play the game? And that is really interesting because although Bitcoin is not mentioned once in the book, and also I guess James Rickards has no clue about Bitcoin, he was describing a very, very reasonable attack scenario that could be, they were using gold to play this this attack scenario in this book, because obviously James Rickards didn't know back then about Bitcoin and all the strengths of that currency. But if you would replace gold with Bitcoin, it would even play out much more devastating, I guess. So yeah, that was really, really interesting to read. I mean, you always have to, if you're looking away from the hardcore Bitcoin sphere into other topics, you have to like extrapolate what would Bitcoin mean in the scope of this very book. And yeah, that gives you the extra information that sometimes can really blow your mind.
What other books are there to be read? I've actually been reading, right now I'm reading Never Split the Difference by Chris Voss, who was an FBI negotiator back then. He served like for 20, 30 years in the FBI as a chief negotiator. He does some really, really great things about negotiating. And so far it's been really interesting for me, the book.
Oh, that sounds really good.
Yeah, like he explains like the situation that you can get into, and like what he does in them is just phenomenal. It's just really funny how he describes these kind of encounters, and how he explains like how communication should go in order to reach a better or a good outcome.
Was it Bridge of Spies, right?
What?
What was the name of the title of the book?
Never Split the Difference.
Okay.
Yeah, basically, he has these really great aspects he worked out ever since then. And, like, one of the best one is, like, mirroring when you're asking questions, with the three words or the main word and three words extra in a sentence that somebody said. And then there are things like labeling feelings and things in a conversation, and then paraphrasing an entire whole world of the speaker, and then it can, you know, like steer conversations and then influence people's views or whatever. It's really interesting. I really like it. I actually plan to use this. I totally read this book and then read another one, which is called as having. Wow, let me just check the name quickly. Hold on.
Impossible Conversations. How to have impossible conversations.
Yes, how to have impossible conversations. Yeah, because I want to go, because actually my subscription on my cellular, I mean my cell phone subscription, I kind of ended. I need to go into Vodafone later, and I need to like act like I'm canceling my subscription, and then they're gonna put me on a phone, and I need to negotiate with the person on the phone in order to get a better deal.
Usually, usually just by canceling the subscription, you will get so much more. Like that works really fine with Audible, I guess. If you cancel the subscription, they will try to incentivize you a lot for just staying in the service, and then you will get books for free. And
Where?
I think in Audible it worked for me. I canceled my monthly subscription, and then they were like giving me books for free. It was either Audible or Kindle, but I guess it was Audible. Yeah, that works really good. So, and you don't have to negotiate with anybody. It's just the algorithm will throw you the bonuses. Yeah.
Okay. So so about this book, it's really good in my opinion. I'm like almost halfway into it, and I'm really enjoying the narrative style. And the best thing is that actually this book is quite connected to Nassim Taleb, because this guy here created this company called this Black Swan LTD, Black Swan Group. So he was quite influenced by Taleb's book, basically, which is quite good whenever I see people influenced by Taleb, because whenever I see people who was influenced by him, I immediately recognize his writing style, like how the things are set up in a way that, like, there are individual chapters and then chapters have multiple subsections in it, so it's easier to navigate a book that way. Which was quite native to Taleb's writing, which I really, really like. And then there's Daniel Kahneman, who also copied the same narrative style what Taleb had. And so on, we have this Talebian narrative styles for books, which is really amazing, in my opinion.
I mean, the book from Kahneman I read, from Taleb I read also two books, the Black Swan and Anti-Fragile I read from him. Slow Thinking, Fast Thinking was, I think, from Kahneman.
Thinking
I
also Fast read and that. Slow, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like super funny because we have so many books that we both read independently of the other knowing it. It's like funny. I think it's because they are already ranked really high on the Amazon recommendation list, and that's why we are both reading those books independently. Yeah.
Even yeah. Chris Voss mentions Daniel Kahneman a couple of times and refers to the same book, because Kahneman actually pioneered the behavioral psychology, or what was it? Because he was the one who said that basically human beings are illogical beings. They do things illogically. It's like irrational creatures, because they don't act rationally most of the time.
Yeah, although they think they are.
Probably. I mean, it's his thing that he got a Nobel Prize for. So I don't know. I never read his book, but I'm gonna be reading it after I'm done with the two other books.
Yeah, it's super fun. You can set up some like questions in a way that you basically people disprove themselves in like two or three consecutive questions. They would like contradict themselves within like a very limited amount of questions you have to ask, and then it would say yeah. There are a ton of experience examples in that book, Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow, and it's like it reminds you on how little you yourself are behaving rational, and probably also to contemplate a little bit on when to take decisions, and sometimes probably like postpone a decision if you're not feeling fine, you just like sleep over it, right?
Okay, so I posted us the link into my book lineup that I read. So like this is interesting thing. It does Bitcoin, it's like the wider space where Bitcoiners interacting. So does the online space of Bitcoiners are more inclined to reading books, do you guys think? Is it part of the Bitcoin culture that we read more books?
I have to say, sorry to go first, but I have to say I'm astonished by the amount of Bitcoiners that might not come because of books. And have to say, personally, really understanding Bitcoin, I can't imagine without reading books.
It's true. I wouldn't be here without two or three very, very important books that I read. But I think also the time changes, right? I mean, we are right now recording a podcast, and people have the possibility to consume this information very, very easily. But back in the days, like 4 years ago, it was tough and there were only a few books around. Bitcoin Standard wasn't published. So many books were missing that we have now and that are really good. So finding sources and digging into the topic was much more difficult back then, like 4 years ago, 5 years ago, than it is now. And I think that resulted in the earlier guys, and the OGs, as they are called nowadays, that they had to basically read books in order to get the big picture. Probably that's a way of explaining that it shifts nowadays towards like podcasts and particularly podcasts, I would say.
Yeah, like there's a big abundance of Bitcoin books these days. I'm also releasing a book soon.
Curious about that. I want a digital copy for my Kindle. A signed digital copy.
I would get it when it's in Bitcoin Audible.
Okay. Yeah. We're going to get Guy Swan on the line.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like for me, with releasing a book, it's quite a challenging task because I need to get formatting right for the book. And then I still need to get a cover art done for the book so it looks nice and catchy, but it's still not too extravagant.
Okay.
Because like mostly like targeting basically people who are in higher education, who try and research Bitcoin basically. And like since my work is quite like the basis of for how would I say, like social psychology and what else is there? Yeah, basically social psychology. And then
I recently read before I read that I was actually reading Factfulness. I don't know, have you heard about it?
No, I didn't.
I think I also have it in my audio.
What did you think?
I find it very cool. It's a very cool book because it's about misconceptions, right? I mean, it's basically saying the news are always giving us the worst picture of the world because they want to sell or they want to increase their audience. So therefore, you switch on the news and you see only horrible things. When in fact, many, many, many things improved and went for the better. But they will, not, of course, not show you because they kind of catch the audience. So I think this book is a really, really good thing to look at or to straighten out some of your misconceptions that you had, that like world is going down the drain and we are doomed. This is not the case. We are improving our situation consistently, and we are also doing great advances in environmental protection and many aspects. And this book was really good for me. I think I listened to it while I was doing a cycling tour, and I was it was making me a happier person because you see the light at the end of the tunnel. You see that not everything is as bad as you would see it in the news. Yeah.
Is this book by Hans Rosling?
Yeah, exactly.
Okay, I just added onto my basket.
I mean, I have to agree that this is true, that you often catch yourself within these misconceptions and things he's explaining. But I also have to say, I was a little bit disappointed. The book to me is not explaining a factful or fact-based worldview and how to maintain one, right? Yeah. But at the same time, it's not explaining, you know, and now in 2020, how important it is to verify what facts, where those facts are from, and how to do that, you know? It's like just taking any facts as base for this. And I feel like, you know, the history books are not necessarily saying the truth. And we see that over and over now, and we're living through such times right now, you know, that the history books of the future will be referring to as maybe some scam or, you know, whoever wins, like the worst or the start of something, who knows, the start of the equilibrium. But like that was kind of disappointing to me.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, that is a huge concern nowadays, that how do you figure which information is valid and what is just scam. It's really tough. It's really tough nowadays more than ever. And it's getting worse with deep fakes and, I don't know, manipulation in the social media and whatnot. It's like, yeah, that's a tough one.
But other than that, I have to say, like you said, it was cool to see how we as a race have been improving.
Yeah. Restore some faith, right?
Yeah.
Probably this is the book of the day.
I mean, I kind of haven't heard of it within like Bitcoin circles, but I wanted to venture out, and then I took this book and I was like, eh, like ventured out too early, you know?
Yeah, I see.
So why Bitcoiners keep reading books? What do you guys think?
It's probably like blood in the water, you know? Like you understood that. I think Bitcoin, with like the low time frame for preference, with the lesson of dollar cost averaging and stacking sats, you know, it's teaching you about the what Albert Einstein referred to as the eighth wonder of the world, which is the power of compounding, you know.
You're right.
And as a Bitcoiner, you kind of understood that knowledge is to gain with reading certain books. And once you understood this, you're just out for the next thing, for the next thing that helps you understand the next block. You know, like when you read The Creature from Jekyll Island or The Sovereign Individual right after the Bitcoin Standard, and you're like, what the fuck? You know?
Yeah, I was also reading all those two. Yeah, it's true. It's absolutely true. It's like everything clicks into place somehow, right? And you get this complete view, or your view of the world is getting more and more complete. And I think that's also a very important piece that you have to educate yourself. Otherwise, in this sphere, this Bitcoin sphere, is so many scams are going on, or not in the Bitcoin sphere, but probably in the cryptocurrency sphere. And with you, if you're not reading and educating yourself constantly, you will fall for them sooner or later. It's really tough to avoid them, and you have to broaden your perspective and also look over the edge of your Bitcoin filter bubble in order to be able to comprehend all the rest that is there, because Bitcoin alone is not solving anything. You need a shitty fiat system in order for Bitcoin to provide this very petri dish for Bitcoin to grow, right? And yeah, that is something you need a lot of education in order to get the really big pictures, sort of. Yeah,
true.
Also, it's interesting that perhaps what I've been thinking is that maybe Bitcoiners have to keep improving themselves in order to be able to function in the future. Because if you think about it, like the world today is really rigged, and there's barely any good access to information. So the only way to do it, I mean, outside of the education systems and all these things, only good way to do it is getting books and then sitting down and then reading everything. That's what I'm kind of thinking. Because for me, for example, books are like a way out of this whole nightmare that I'm in. And through Bitcoin, I'm kind of achieving my goals basically with it. So it's like an added benefit I'm creating for myself by proceeding to read books that I think that could help me in the future as a person and as a Bitcoiner who will be doing business in the future also. So that's my main point with the entire educate yourself all the time. This lifelong learning what they've been pushing on to people.
Yeah, this is a very important and very important aspect, because if you are studying economy, for instance, at a university somewhere, you will get massively biased pro fiat, right? I mean, if you want to educate yourself on the drawbacks of fiat, you need to read books like the Creature from Jekyll Island, or Currency Wars, or there are a ton of those books that go into that direction, because you will never be provided by your Professor Rubini or what his name is on the drawbacks of the fiat system, right? You won't get that in a class from Yale or Stanford from an econ prof. I don't think that this is something that is readily available in some class, or not at least not
in pretty much like you're not going to be getting the good information from the mainstream educational system. That's just impossible. Universities are very, very inclined towards the liberal side of politics, and they kind of hammer it down on your throat whenever you go there.
But the question that I'm asking myself is, how do I make sure to read the right kind of books? You know, because you buy, for example, the Bitcoin Standard on Amazon, and suddenly you get like all these crappy crypto blockchain book recommendations in your line, and you just think like, what the fuck? Like, you know, it's just embarrassing. Like some Dogecoin book, some book about how blockchain revolutionizes anything. You know, like,
yeah, I had my luck with it. Actually, I went through this once and I bought a book from this no-name woman called Blockchain. What the fuck was the name of it? I don't even remember.
It was called Blockchain Everything.
Blockchain, some bullshit.
Something like that. Blockchain Everything. The solution to every problem.
Yeah. I think the dumbest I ever bought regarding this is the ebook by the Wall Street Playboys.
Okay.
Do you know the guys like on Twitter or basically just tweeting? I don't know. They're like Dave Portnoy before Dave Portnoy, you know?
Ah, okay.
Yeah.
But let's address this point, right? So how are you able to distinguish whether a book is crappy or not? By having read before many books that cemented your point of view or that gave you the possibility to judge whether that is trash or not.
Yeah.
And that's the main thing, right? Like, read a shitload of books. A truckload of books. We should edit that out, I guess.
Yeah, this is a good point. For example, I bought Peter Thiel's From Zero to One. And I was told that book can basically really mess up your mind. Because it talks about fiat money like it's a sound money system. But if you already know what kind of system Bitcoin brings about, you're immediately able to take out this system from its concept there. It's explained in the book. And you can just like understand and see behind what's going on with the processes there.
Yeah.
So this way, if you already... Yeah. Sorry about interrupting you. It's like this is like when you... Basically, you buy books that are like, even if it's related to socialism, you're immediately able to relate back to your current present views than to some other kinds of a thing that's happening. And what happens there is that then you are able to selectively basically figure out if this book is good or not. So when I bought like David Golumbia's book, basically, I immediately knew it was a piece of trash because he was so skeptical of Bitcoin. He had misconceptions in the book, and he spoke like a usual liberal arts professor, and like it just the whole thing just kind of came off of him. And then you can basically just like see like if it actually works or not, because if you're gonna see some Keynesian bullshit in the book, you obviously gonna understand it's not working. It's not good.
Yeah.
What else did you guys read?
Ton of sci-fi.
Okay.
Ton of sci-fi, because I cannot read only about economics. At a certain point, I need to read stuff about spaceships and robots and whatnot.
Gotta build that citadel somehow, man.
Yeah, exactly.
Excellent.
Yeah.
I really have to say I like to read about economy and stuff. It's not the boring stuff, but especially stuff that's I don't know about like old economic decisions based upon like old perceptions of natural law or civil rights. You know, I think that's pretty interesting in terms of history and civilization.
I've been really wanting to branch out into criminology. And this whole thing with hostage negotiation is really interesting for me. You can never know when you're going to need it, actually.
That's true.
In terms of historic books about finances, The Lords of Finance? Do you know that book?
I haven't heard.
This one is really great. I think the guy got the Pulitzer Prize for it. Let me quickly Google that. Give me a second.
Okay, I'm gonna drop one more title. The Price of Tomorrow. Everybody who hasn't read like just go and read it. It's an amazing book.
It's on my list just after the couple books that I'm gonna be reading first.
Yes, I think already stored in my Kindle, but did not start it yet because too many good books are around, really. But I will go get there. Yeah.
And this is what right when you know a lot, the longer your unread book pile is going to get. And actually, it's I noticed horrible. This is horrible in a sense because you still need to read them, and then you will figure out that there's even more that you need to read. And then there's going to be even more that you're going to have to read. And then there is not going to be enough space in your house for all the books.
But you know, the amazing thing is once you started reading and you started finishing books and you realize that it's very well possible to read that much and to know that much.
Yeah. That's very good. It's really healthy also.
What happens is you are then at like a barbecue, talking with people, and you are telling them things that they were never thinking about or that they probably don't understand, and this is just the introduction, right? And then all of a sudden, like, oh man, when did I lose you? Like 45 minutes ago. Oh, I'm sorry for that. Like, you're then the weirdo, right? You're standing somewhere. Like, don't talk with this guy. He will bombard you with the history of financial decisions from 1847 in Europe or something like that. Like, yeah, you can become weirdo. You have to really, like, be careful that you don't bomb the people too much with the information. This is particularly important for Bitcoin, as I assume.
Yeah, it's interesting.
And I found it. It's called Lords of Finance, 1929, The Great Depression and the Bankers Who Broke the World. This is a really good one. From, I hope I'm pronouncing the name correctly, Likert Ahmed. And I think the guy won the Pulitzer Prize for this book. Really good book. It's like... explaining how the currency crisis and the hyperinflation in Germany unraveled and the First and Second World War and how everything played together. It was really a really interesting book. If you're into this kind of things, I really can recommend it. Reading it.
Cool.
Also, how did I end up in Bitcoin, or why was I getting into this whole financial thing? Is I read a book. I found a book lying in a, when I was like, I don't know, 14 years old. A friend of mine had the book that was called $1 trillion, I assume. And this book was interesting. I saw it lying there. I forgot about it. And then in my 20s, I read it. I bought it. I found it somewhere in a bookstore. I remember that I saw it lying when I was a child at a friend's house. And I bought it. And this was really eye-opening. It is by Andreas Eschbach. And this is a really really interesting book because it explains sort of how compound interest works and has this interesting concept of that some guy in the medieval times was creating a fortune, a small fortune, and he found some creepy Italian lawyer family that was investing it with an over compound interest of, let's say, 500 years. He has such an amount of money, and he's then tasked by this lawyer family to save the world with it, with this incredible amount of money. And this is something that a Bitcoiner can relate to very well because, Bitcoin might at a certain point become very, 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 how do I say, have a lot of purchasing power. And this was really a good introduction into how the financial system works and how compound interest works and how inflation works against you. And at the same time, it is completely, it's just an entertainment book, right? It's not like education and an educational book. It's just a novel, but it's really funny. This was, I think, my start when I got interested in the whole financial system.
Nice.
$1 trillion is called by Andreas Eschbach. Yeah.
Oh, cool.
I need to Google it.
I found it. I can post a link.
$1 billion. Is it in German?
I think it's in. It was in German, but I translated it later on. I found an English version on Google Books. Yeah. Published in 2014. But it's like entertainment book, right? It's not something like... Yeah, let's finish the last 10 minutes and tell each other Wuhan jokes.
I don't think I have any Wuhan joke.
There are no such things, right?
It's a joke by itself.
But give me a second. Yes, I read one because I Googled one. And it goes like that. It goes like that. I got off the telephone with a professor, and he said it makes totally no sense to get the 19 right now because they're expecting to release the 20 Pro in October.
Okay.
Eric is not hooked. Eric is not hooked. Okay, I'm sorry. Yeah.
It's fine, man.
But we have to cut that out anyways, because we will get censored.
RIP.
Yeah.
Well, okay, I think we reached the end of this podcast.
Caro, you cut all the last 2 minutes. You cut them completely, right? I count on you.
I don't think our dear listener is going to be understanding what we're laughing about, but never mind. It's okay. I might just try and like leave it in. But
these are the podcasts you need to be in the groups for, you know, on Telegram and stuff.
Maybe.
You need to make sense of something.
Oh, man. How should we do that? Okay, I think we're going to cut all this. And okay, let's just somehow end. So, yeah, I think we reached the end of this podcast. Because I think we covered quite a lot. Maybe we could have a second episode with this when we quite progress with some readings, I guess. Maybe. What do you guys say?
I'm totally up to it, yeah. Yes, education definitely is key.
Education is always key. People should keep reading books and educating themselves for the future. Because the whole point is that if we remain in action, then the future is going to be bleak. Because if we don't keep reading books and educating ourselves, then we will miss out on so much opportunity and so much optionality that we won't be able to do anything. Then when you get to the point when Bitcoin's price is going to reach like $10 million and for Bitcoin, you're just going to be at the point like, what are you going to do with that Bitcoin? How are you going to spend it? What are you going to do with it? And you're not going to know what you're going to do with it, and you're going to be in trouble. Because if you just have your Bitcoin for just going off to the Bahamas and having a good blast, that's not going to be productive for nobody. Of course, everybody has the right to go off to the Bahamas and have a good life until they die, but doing something productive is much more important, in my opinion. I don't know how others see it, but I kind of like think like this is how it should go.
Keep creating value, exactly. I mean, we're just in this problem right now because the banking sector got so big, right?
Well, not just that. Everything in society got corrupted, basically. That's why we're here. Because of how the printing of money destroyed society.
Yeah.
Yep. Keep compounding knowledge.
Keep compounding
and Satoshis.
And taking the orange pill.
Yes, exactly.
Although we're not affiliated with the Orange Pill podcast.
Okay.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, guys. And this is going to be for tonight. Thanks for listening.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah.
No problem, guys. It's always a pleasure to having you.